The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra and a question. Is Balotelli what American voters were watching on election night? The pod looks back on a midweek that saw plenty of people put crosses in boxes and gave Barcelona a result that was like Mitt Romney, unprecedented. We salute Celtic, pass by South London, where Crystal Palace, now on the Holloway Road, go top of the Championship table, then unleash the full might of our weekend previews. Rome Derby, Chelsea Liverpool, Man City Spurs, all that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Collector's edition of Football Weekly Extra today. James Horncastle's here.
Hello.
Youth's Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And also in from our young friends department, Tom Lux.
How old do you need to be young?
You're from the senior end of the young friends department, okay, I think, Tom. Yeah. Nice to see you, though, especially on such a special week. Special? Why, Tom?
Because it was the US election.
Yeah, and that. And the Celtic. And the Celtic game.
Yeah, what a game. I kind of half watched it in the pub with my friend who doesn't like
Thanks
football.
Thanks so much, Tom, for being with us. Yeah. Well, let's dial up a man who was there for the game. And I think has one or two things that we're due to say to him. Ewan Murray.
James, how are you?
I'm very well. I tell you, I'm very well.
You're under Twitter bombardment, I see.
Yeah, there have been one or two tweets. Tweets like this from Vikram Vazu. Can't wait for Football Weekly to see what AC Jimbo has to say to Mr. Ewan Murray. A full apology expected.
Welcome to my world. You upset these people.
You get random and unjustified abuse. This was entirely justified. I have to say, Ali Graham, could you have been more patronising to Mr. Ewan Murray on Monday? We'll watch this space, Ali. Big apology due tomorrow. And Celtic Chuck, no pish out of you, and you're ignorant mates tomorrow. They're all spot on. We were bang out of order. And you know what? It came back to bite us,
exactly.
Just like you said it would.
Exactly.
But did you really think, without captain and top scorer, with one of the best teams in the world up against you, did you really think something like this could happen?
No, I thought Celtic would score. And I thought that in the away game as well. But no, you can't. I mean, you can't. It would be clever of me to say, yeah, I always thought they could do something, but I didn't know. I mean, not against Barcelona. And even when they were 1-0 up, you just had that feeling something's going to go wrong for Celtic here and Barca are going to come back into it. So, no, I have to hold my hands up. But I did think, you know, you were a wee bit overly critical or a wee bit dismissive of Celtic, I thought, because they have got players who have adapted very well to European football this season. And I just thought they had players who could give Barcelona trouble in defence, and so it proved.
Do you think Barcelona were a bit dismissive as well?
No, I don't think so. I mean, certainly in Barcelona, their manager was extremely, and I didn't just think it was talk, he was extremely strong in his praise of Celtic, and he highlighted set pieces as a danger to Barcelona. And Celtic, of course, scored from set pieces in the two games they played against them. Barcelona didn't have one of their better nights. They were pretty tepid in front of goal. You know, we have to say that as well. But I don't think their attitude was wrong. I don't think their attitude's ever wrong. I mean, Messi scored in stoppage time. You know, they were still going at it, still trying to get something from the game. So I don't think it was an attitude problem. I just think it was a combination of Celtic on a very good night, Barcelona not at their best, and the whole occasion and atmosphere playing into Celtic's favour.
Mm. You mentioned the atmosphere. How would you rank that among football games you've attended?
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, Celtic Park is special on nights like that. I mean, I've seen Milan defeated there, I've seen Manchester United defeated there, and it really is a great spectacle. And the Celtic players just revel in it, and it's why I spoke about it the other day with you. When they come back to as you would call it, mundane SPL fixtures, I think it's difficult for them, because you get these spectacular European nights, and then you go back in, and no disrespect, to a Scottish Premier League game against St Johnstone or St Mirren, and coping with that lull, I think, if that's the right word, I think it's difficult for the players.
Mm. We'll ask you about what's to come in a second, but what was the atmosphere like after the game, and indeed this morning? What's the mood?
I heard a lot of people singing in the streets. This morning, quiet. I think there's probably a lot of sore heads about.
Right. One or two sirens as well, as usual.
Yeah. Men in white coats coming to get me, maybe. No, I mean, I don't know, last night, an element of disbelief, I think, which is probably understandable. And, you know, the other key thing is Celtic now are on the brink of going to the last 16, which is, you know, that was the significance of a result in the Champions League context, and we shouldn't forget about that, because they're a young team, they're a relatively inexperienced team, and they certainly are inexperienced at Champions League level, and they're now on the brink of going through to the knockout phase, which would be an absolutely fantastic achievement. So, jubilation, celebration, I think a slight element of disbelief last night, and this morning, obviously, you've got one half of Glasgow who are still absolutely delighted and revelling in a famous success. And listen, a lot of these players should do as well, because, you know, I mentioned Victor Wanyama to you the other day. I thought he was absolutely outstanding last night. Other guys, Mikko Lustig, Adam Matthews, just, you know, stepped up to the plate in the big occasion. They didn't freeze, and they're entitled to be really pleased with how they performed in that environment. And, of course, once again, Fraser Forster, the goalkeeper, who is rightly in England set up, and again showed why last night. I thought he was terrific too.
Is there any nervousness now among Celtic fans, Ewan, that despite the achievement against Barcelona, qualifying for the last 16 might still slip out of their reach, because there's this tough away game coming up against Benfica, who I think are just 3 points behind Celtic in the group?
Yeah, I don't know about the fans, but Neil Lennon certainly did warn that immediately after the game. He said we need to be careful, there's now an expectation that we're going to go through. And, you know, teams have thrown it away, qualification from positions like this, and Scottish teams indeed have done likewise. So 7 points almost certainly wouldn't be enough. The bonus for Celtic is they play Spartak at home in their last game, and you would think if they have to win that game to go through, they could do it. But they've been to Lisbon before. Certainly the recent occasion is going to play Benfica. They've struggled there. Benfica do seem to be good at home.
Right.
So that is a tough game, and I think it would be... I mean, it would happen that Neil Lennon and the players now think that's it, we're through, but it would be daft for anyone else to think that, because they need to remain really strongly focused for these next two games.
Right. If only you had some kind of tradition of big European successes in Lisbon. Never mind, eh?
You see, that's you trying to ingratiate yourself with them again. You see, you're talking them up.
Yep.
Get them back on side.
Yeah,
right.
We don't want to do that. No chance away to Benfica. That's the pod's verdict.
It's a sign of how much you've upset the Celtic fans. I'm seen as a voice of sanity and reason. Normally it's me who upsets them, but now they've turned on you.
There's room for both of us. Ewan, thank you so much for that. Enjoy, and look forward to catching up with you ahead of the Benfica game, perhaps.
No problem. Speak to you soon.
Ewan Murray, very much in Glasgow. Now, James, I know you were at Stamford Bridge. You weren't able to live the full drama there at Parkhead, and you, Tom, plainly had other things on.
I wanted to watch the game.
Right.
But my
happened?
Friend didn't. So I faced the screen.
Yes.
And was like watching it. And then he was getting progressively angrier as I ignored what he had to say.
Right. Okay.
I thought the second goal was brilliant, just because it's possibly one of the most complex teams the world's ever produced, just undone by a punt up the pitch that bounced twice.
Yeah. And right. It was Chappie who kind of missed that goal kick. But
I don't think, to be honest, he got good reviews in the first game against Celtic. I didn't think he was particularly good in that one either. He seemed to be misplacing the ball a lot. But that was just me. I did enjoy seeing Rod Stewart in tears. Even more exciting than cocaine up your bum, by the looks of it.
Well, now that was just caught up in the emotion of the occasion. I mean, the scenes. I saw the highlights afterwards, and the scene, it did look absolutely incredible to be a part of that. I mean, the fact that Barcelona only led for a minute against Celtic in both in the entirety of those two games is just completely,
it's mind-boggling, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's not just the victory last night that's been impressive. As James kind of touched on there, they nearly beat Barcelona in Barcelona, and they've won in Moscow as well. I think they've won 6 of their 8 Champions League games this season, including qualification. So it's just the whole campaign's been impressive, not just last night.
Right, yeah. Well, a huge game coming up against Benfica. We'll get Sid's view a little bit later on, and what they're saying in the Catalan capital, that kind of thing, reaction to that defeat. And also, of course, to Real Madrid only getting the draw at home to Borussia Dortmund. Now, though, let's move on, James. Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, it was excellent. It was a really entertaining game. Because Di Matteo afterwards said that he felt that Chelsea deserved the win. And they did play well in spells, as we've come to expect from them. Yeah, that at times their attacking football was exceptional. But I don't think they were worth the win.
Chelsea.
No. If you look at the goals, Piatov, the Shakhtar goalkeeper, was at fault for both. I mean, take nothing away from Oscar's finish for his second, which was exceptional again.
Take your hat off to Oscar.
Give that man an Oscar.
Piatov for... Yeah,
I've never seen it. It's been a long time since I've seen a coach in a post-match press conference come down so hard on a player as Luchescu did on Piatov, saying how disgusted he was with his performance. I think one of the things that became clear in that United game that Chelsea played in the league was how vulnerable they are to width. Essentially, you know, remember how. Ferguson went from playing a diamond to playing wingers, and they really exposed Chelsea on that left-hand side where Hazard plays and offers absolutely no protection to his fullback. And that was exactly the same problem yesterday, where Shakhtar just had they could do what they wanted down that side, and it must be a worry for them. I do think for Chelsea, do they have a plan B? Because they have one way of playing. I think we've all got kind of forgotten that it's quite a courageous decision of Di Matteo to play three number 10s.
Mm.
I think because he's done that since the start of the season, we forget that. It's quite a risky and thing to be doing.
Right. The winning goal righted the death from Victor Moses. What does that mean for Torres' future?
I don't think it means that much because... I mean, Torres got himself about. I mean, last night.
Yeah, but
I mean,
he does, doesn't he?
We always say about Torres that he sort of runs a lot and makes space for people, but ultimately he's not decisive when he gets the one on one with the defender or one on one with the goalkeeper. You look at someone like Van Persie, gets one touch and shoots, but Torres, he's just dilly dallying the whole time. And
he seems to score more scrappy goals than he ever used to. He used to be someone kind of like that Van Persie kind of finisher, like the goal that Van Persie scored last night.
Right.
That was very kind of his thing. Well, it's not much anymore.
If Chelsea had Torres of, 07 to 09, you back them to win the league, you think they'd be in for the Champions League. But I think without a striker of top class, they were going to fall short because it's all based around those three.
Yeah, well, the positive is that they share the goals around and that they're not dependent on one player. Which kind of, they kind of win in spite of Torres sometimes, even though his performances have been decent. But, I mean, as for Moses, I think he scored a decisive goal at the weekend, got the equaliser against Swansea, did it again at the death last night, which was a huge goal considering that, looking ahead to that game, that trip to Turin, as long as they beat Norgeland, as long as they draw against Juventus, they should go through. They don't have to win that game, hypothetically.
Well, it's a huge game now, and Juve coming off a 4-0 win against Norgeland themselves at midweek. But it's interesting, and another big game coming up for Chelsea back in the Premier League this weekend, when on Sunday they'll be hosting Liverpool. Do you know, this is the 30th time these two clubs have faced each other in just 7 years. 30.
They've all been classics
years.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah, although actually of late they've not been too unexciting. A huge game at Anfield last time they met, and a big win it was for Liverpool. This time around, Torres gets the start as usual, etc. Any changes, do you think?
No, apart from JT coming back. I mean, he obviously...
If he does.
Yeah. Is his ban...
His ban will be over, but midweek as well, and he just had him watching on an exercise bike, looking a little bit miffed, to be honest, I thought. But, of course, Ashley Cole not there. And you're talking about problems in the flanks, etc.
Well, that was the thing. They played Bertrand at left back, and he looked very uncomfortable, partly because Hazard just wasn't prepared to track back for most of the game. Even when there were times where he would go narrow, Hazard would stay wide, and there's just this huge channel in the middle. And I think it's something that Shakhtar exploited, and Brendan Rodgers will go for it.
The one thing that in Steve Mateo's favour is this is how Abramovich wants the team to be playing, so... If he starts getting angry at Di Matteo, how wise it is to throw something back in Abramovich's face, he could say, well, this is what you wanted at the club.
Right. Have some of that, you big oligarch. You.
I wouldn't say it.
Right.
I'd just keep quiet.
So it's an interesting proposition, though, isn't it? Raheem Sterling up against Ryan Bertrand. One of the many exciting things. Of course, Raheem Sterling not part of Liverpool's Thursday night Europa League clash. Brendan Rodgers travelling to Moscow. He's left pretty much the first team behind. Probably to guard the houses, I'm not absolutely sure. but also with half an eye on the Chelsea fixture.
I think that's prudent because Chelsea played at home and have that extra day's rest as
right.
well.
Right.
Whereas Liverpool, I mean, you know, got a long trip and they're playing tonight, so it's one less
yep.
day to recuperate as well. So
can't argue with you there. Liverpool, who started, made the worst start to the league for 101 years and are still ducked down in, I think, 12th place, wrong side of the table. They'd love a win in this, Jacob. Can you see them getting it?
No.
Right. A draw, perhaps?
No, I think Chelsea will win.
Right.
They're playing pretty well at the moment. I know they lost the... They had a little dodgy run, one win in four games, but they were scoring goals at the same time. And they were being outscored. It's hard to see Liverpool outscoring them, you know, that yeah. apart from the game against Norwich where they put five past them, and also the game against Everton where they scored three good goals and had one, you know, one of them was disallowed.
Yeah.
But they don't, it's all based around Suarez. There's no one to back him up, really.
Right.
And the fascinating thing from that Newcastle game at the weekend was the goal, which was brilliant. Essentially, it was very route one. You know, it's the long ball from Jose Enrique. To Suarez, and it's not something you associate with Brendan's passy philosophy, is
right.
it? So,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with putting it in the mixer every now and again.
Hey, here comes part two. Ajax, Man City. Man City almost out of the Champions League. Almost out of the Champions League. Dante meets Bosch. Posting in, pointing out City are in danger of registering the worst group stage performance by an English team in the Champions League ever. A record for the fewest points picked up by an English side in the current format is 6 by Man United 6 or 7 years ago. They've got how many cities so far?
Two?
Yeah.
That's rotten, isn't it? Why?
Because their manager is Roberto Mancini.
Oh, go on. It's not that simple, is
Kiss
it?
Of death.
He didn't tinker this time, did he?
No, but he doesn't know what to do in Europe.
Right. What's so different about playing in Europe?
The teams are better.
But the thing about the goals they conceded,
yep.
they weren't tricky European goals.
No.
They were goals that you should be able to defend against, or chances you should defend against in the Premier League. And it was a matter of, I mean, one was off a corner.
Both off corners.
And it was a matter of defenders just like watching the people they're supposed to mark.
Hmm.
And on conceding goals.
On Sky afterwards, every time they, on the goals highlight show, every time now, Souness and Neville start going on about the zonal marking.
Yeah,
on Twitter starts going, pretending that they know more than Souness and Neville, but these guys have played football and one of them has managed a football team. They probably know what they're talking about.
Right.
This zonal marking, they do seem to be conceding.
I was going
to
start talking about zonal marking, then I realised I didn't know anything about it, so I thought I'd leave it to
one. Clever people who do and often play the game suggest that previously, it wasn't pure zonal what Man City were doing. They were doing what the Italians often call a dirty zonal. But now they've gone to pure zonal, and it's all going so very, very wrong. They did look all at sea for those only two goals.
What I found quite staggering about those two goals was just the reaction of the City players. Okay, they obviously came back into the game and got a result, but they just, like Joe Hart's reaction was just like...
Yeah, he looked like he just was completely fed up.
Yeah, helpless, kind of like, this is what it is.
Keane was slagging off the atmosphere in the stadium.
Yeah,
there's so many empty seats there. I think 8,000 empty seats. And when they score, it doesn't seem to be any huge reaction. And
at the end, when they had that goal disallowed, there were banks of seats behind the goal empty, and that's not really when you leave a football game, you know, when your team's coming back into it.
This is though a club that's had so much tradition in the Champions League, you can understand them getting a little bit blasé about clubs like that turning up again. There you go. It's fascinating, isn't it? There's a lot of people talking about inexperience. Mancini himself saying we need 10 years, but people pointing out, I mean, 241 appearances these players have had in the
and
in
how
the
much
Champions
is
League.
There?
Four of them have won it previously.
And one of them's, you know, Silva's won a World Cup.
Although he wasn't.
He wasn't there, but that's part of the team. And there's something like 386 international caps between them. How much is there Ajax and Dortmund Champions League experience?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's good to compare them with Dortmund, because Dortmund came back into the Champions League last year, as did City. They've had the same sort of time, sort of learning curve as City have had.
Hmm.
And yet they're in this group and they're performing brilliantly. You can tell that they went out of the group stages last year, just did City, and yet they've progressed. They seem to have learnt, if they're is something to learn here.
Right.
How to perform in Europe, and have been superb, certainly the last two games.
And as to the end of the game, I can understand the players and Mancini's frustration because they should have had a goal. But if your team, as a manager, if your team's a little bit ill-disciplined and has let in goals they shouldn't have and have looked a bit shabby, the last thing you should be doing is going onto the pitch and going off your head, and you should be setting an example for your players about how to behave. And
it was old school Mancini, wasn't it? From the days when he used to have to be held back from attacking the referee and that.
I think his temperament is a big problem because I think players feed off it. Like we were saying about the reaction to the two goals they conceded earlier. This whole it's finished spiel. How often have we heard Mancini say that? And it must feed into the players where you think, yeah, it's finished. I mean, credit to them to get back into the game, but his reaction afterwards was just like, well, you know, I mean, everything he's said throughout this Champions League campaign, it's just bizarre. The whole, I had a Fiat in, so I've got Ferrari at City. Well, he's not driven it very well. And then you have the case where he said after the Ajax game in Amsterdam, we didn't prepare at all. It's just, you know,
it's shocking, isn't it?
Well, if the squad is actually as good as it should be, I think if you take it, there are maybe six absolutely top class players: Toure, Silva, Hart, Company, Aguero, and Tevez. And then beyond that, you know, there are people like Barry and Milner who are quite clearly not up to it at that sort of level. The defence isn't necessarily the best, and for the amount of money they've spent, that squad should probably be better. Should be better
defensively.
Prepared.
They've got some pretty big names there as well.
Who?
What? All right. Vincent Kompany?
Yeah, I said Kompany.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Lescott's not a top-class international defender.
Joe Hart?
Defender.
Did you say him?
I said, yeah, Hart.
Right. But, already.
But Clichy's not a great player. Richards is young. Right. I think Richards is someone who could get better, but there's still a lot of flaws there. Zabaleta's kind of solid, but Nastasic is young.
I think he's been okay. I mean, he gave away the corner for the first goal. He was good against West Ham.
I think to point to the squad as not being good enough is maybe a bit of a let off for Mancini.
No, but
this.
It's his squad.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, it's somebody's squad. It's City's squad, anyway.
And that's the thing with the zonal marking thing. It's not necessarily about zonal marking or man marking. It's about how it's coached and the players available to him and whether they're suited to him or not, to it or not. And it doesn't appear that it's been coached very well, does it?
Right. Yaya Touré's goal.
He had to make up for it. Yeah, he had to make up for the two glaring mistakes that led to the Alex's two goals. Great goal.
Goal of the midweek.
Oh,
I think it was, wasn't it? For me, I thought it was an extraordinary goal.
Oscar.
Oh, Oscar's was pretty good actually. Yeah.
I was having a Rob Smythe didn't think it was that special.
What, Oscar's?
Yeah, simply because he thought I was just a player of his standard.
Did he use the words hairy ass chancer?
No, he was saying because he's so good that's just sort of routine for him. But I think that makes it even better. Just
right,
that, you know, someone like that can make it look so easy.
All right, then. Now, Mancini, can that Fiat of his, can he do a three-point turn with it this weekend against Spurs? That's the question. A big game, this. Of course, it was such a thrilling match. Do you remember last season when Spurs looked like they might still be in the title picture and they went up to the Etihad and it all went very wrong. It kind of hinged around a late chance and Gareth Bale couldn't put it away and et cetera, blah, blah, blah. What's going to happen this time? Tom! Yes. I saw you, Lutzy, yawning in the way in the record pod there. Right. Hey, tell you what, we're talking about Spurs. Andre Villas-Boas. I'm getting very confused here because he was clearly destined for disaster and derision and then actually turned out to be really good and got four wins in five. But
now he's destined for disaster and derision again.
And Asu Okotu's tweeting, have a good day at work even if you hate your boss. Did you see that?
That's not necessarily his boss.
Well, it's pretty interesting, a Premier League player. So, morning, everyone. Have a great day at work, even if you hate your boss.
He's quite an interesting guy as well, because he said before he doesn't particularly like football as well.
Right. He's another of those, is he?
Yeah. I always enjoy those players.
But he always turns up and has no idea what's going on. Basically.
Right. That's because he doesn't like football.
But do you think it was just a genuine kind of cheer up message?
Could have been talking about Daniel Levy.
He could also have been talking about Daniel, or his wife.
I don't think he'll necessarily get back in the team.
Who? Asu Okotu?
No. I think the balance that Spurs have struck or did strike during that one was to have Vertonghen at left back and have him in tandem with Bell. And that's been one of Spurs' strong points. So good luck, Benoit.
Yeah, have some of that.
But I think this game after the Wigan result, I think Spurs, well, Villa Spurs will want to show that was an aberration, particularly because after Man City, they've got Arsenal away as well. So this is an important run of games for them. And, you know, if they get two decent results out of City and Arsenal, they're back on track again. But so they've
until the next time.
Yeah, until he's awful again.
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, anyway, they've got Maribor, of course, away in Slovenia on Thursday in the Europa League.
At home.
Unless it's at home, of course, in which case they're at home to Maribor. Good. Now, you mentioned Arsenal, Tom. They were also involved midweek.
Yes.
Took a 2-0 lead.
And threw it all away.
They've got a tough run of games coming up, have Arsenal. You've got Fulham, and then Spurs, as you mentioned, and then Montpellier. I mean, for the moment, in the Champions League, nothing is lost. They're still in good shape to finish second.
I don't think the Montpellier game is such an issue. It's Olympiacos away to finish off the group stages for them, and that's Olympiacos are a decent side, and it's a very hard place to go. And I think they will need to go there and get something from that game. So that's what would concern me.
Right.
Giroud scored. He seems to be picking up slightly, although that's not hard. But it's actually Podolski's
Heading backwards.
Yeah. Mm. He had a really good start.
Or not heading backwards. Yes, that's the problem.
Yeah.
No longer willing to play that role out on the left. Has he basically said, look, I've given you a couple of months, Wenger, now sort it out. I will work hard for the rest of the team for a bit, but I'm going to play as a centre-forward.
Well, his time in Germany, he was kind of known as preferring to be a big fish in a small pond, and that's why he was so good at Cologne. And I guess with Arsenal, if he's not the main man there and kind of having to work hard, I don't know how happy he is with that role at Arsenal.
Right. Interesting. Fulham, as I mentioned this weekend, big derby against Fulham, who've never won away to Arsenal ever, Jacob. I'm just wondering, what are the odds on the Cottagers being above the Gunners by the end of this game? Because it's only goal difference between them right now.
I love Fulham. I think, Brian Ruiz and Berbatov, the sexiest team in the country at the moment, but they're just not very good away from home.
You say that, but Fulham are unbeaten in their past four matches, having defeated Aston Villa and played out draws with Everton, Reading and Southampton. So I don't know if that disagrees with what you just said. Arsenal, by contrast, have only won two of their last six. How about that? And Martignol and Berbatov, with the Spurs, back in the Spurs days, regular nemeses of Arsenal.
I think there'll be goals. That Steve Bowles effect has very quickly worn off. And instead of Santos, I think they played Vermaelen at left back in Schalke. It didn't look entirely comfortable. So I think that's still a work in progress, which for people like Dimi Berbatov and Brian Ruiz, it'll be not easy pickings, but I think they'll have some fun.
All right, then. And what about Walcott? Producer Ben wants to talk about Walcott.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Movember's going well for him, I notice.
Oh, really? I didn't pick up on it.
Give it a week or two.
Kind of dark, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. It was his first start in either the Premier League or the Champions League since the first day of the season.
Yeah.
And he scored and kind of, made his case for...
Had a big chance for a winner at the end.
Exactly, which he said he couldn't get out of his feet, but then sort of hoddle afterwards saying, well, just take it with your left foot.
Right.
Again, it was that kind of thing. Should Walcott be playing through the middle? Well, he wasn't playing through the middle on Tuesday night. He scored from his typical wide area. I mean, I've been quite impressed. I saw him play against QPI. Came on as a sub. And he just injected a lot more pace into that side, as you would expect. But that kind of, because it was late, it gave Arsenal a different edge and different threat, which I think they need. Because when they've been playing with Ramsey on the right, it just doesn't work at
no.
all.
All right then. Now, speaking of things not working, the lights at Braga. How dramatic was that? A blackout, and not in a metaphorical sense, for Man United. But what a turnaround in that game, which none of you, I'm guessing, saw, because there was so much else on midweek. Three goals for United, all in the last 10 minutes, Tom, as they took, some would say, an undeserved win against the third best team in Portugal, Braga, and it's their thing, isn't it? Top of the table, not playing exceptionally well in the league, as in Europe.
Yeah, I was going to kind of say they've qualified from that group, and yet they've had to come from behind in three of the games. And just if you looked at the group table, you'd think it was easy, but it hasn't been easy for them at all. And I don't know whether in the last 16 knockout stages, that's, you know, if they carry on playing as they have in the group stages against better teams, then they're not going to get very far.
There you go. Says Tom Lutz. They've got Aston Villa away this weekend.
Yeah, they're not a last 16 Champions League side.
No.
But they're not a last 16. Anything,
beginning
sorry.
To pick up a little bit of momentum under Paul Lambert.
Yeah, but that's like crawling after you've been standing still.
Yeah, all right then. Okay, they did beat Sunderland last time out. In other Premier League at the weekend news, you've got West Brom away at Wigan. Wigan have had two straight wins.
Yeah, when they get going, they're brilliant to watch. There are times when you play against Wigan and they're absolutely shocking. And then there are other times where they're basically unplayable. You can't do anything against them and you kind of just have to hold your hands up. You know, West Ham went there a couple of weeks ago. They hadn't won for ages and they absolutely played them off the park. And then they go to Spurs last week and you're thinking, oh, they'll probably lose that. And again, they could have won 3 or 4 nil. They've only won 1 nil. But Martinez keeps on talking about it this time. It's because he hasn't lost the same amount of players. He only lost Moses in the summer.
Right.
Diarmi went to West Ham, but he wasn't in the side by the end of the season. Rodriguez, so they've managed to carry it on. Sorry?
Rodriguez,
but again, he wasn't playing for, you know, they've managed to keep that that same core together.
And
although they lost Moses, Kone's come in and he's playing really well, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure about... We have Banter rearing its ugly head in our last podcast, and now unplayable, Jacob. You've entered... Yeah, anyway, it is the new buzzword in football. What about Southampton, Swansea, and all those Nigel Adkins stories? I saw on the back page of one of the papers yesterday both Di Canio and Vialli being linked with Adkins' position as manager of Saints.
Yeah, he thought on Tuesday night he was saying he feared he might lose his job by the weekend, but by the time I got into work on Wednesday morning, he was no longer losing his job.
Oh.
I wouldn't sack him. I just think it's too early in the season. I know they're conceding a lot, but they are scoring goals. And I just
also they played six of the top seven and only one of the bottom seven.
And they're not completely out of touch with the rest of the league yet.
No.
They were bad against West Brom.
Although there is now a 5-point gap between the bottom three, of which they are the bottom side, and the first team that aren't in the bottom three, which is Aston Villa.
They were slightly misguided in the transfer dealings in the summer. I think they spent around 20 million on Rodriguez and Gaston Ramirez when it was clear to really that the defence wasn't up to it. And you kind of just have to put the ball in the general vicinity of their area and they'll kind of just kick it in for you, basically. And I think if they're hopefully in some sort of touching distance by January, they'd need to basically replace the entire back four.
Ooh.
Because they've 28 goals in, 10 games? It's the worst ever.
Yeah. Oh, I read today that it's now the second worst ever because of presumably the fact they only conceded two in the last match. I don't know.
It's still bad.
It's still bad, let's be frank. How about your side, West Ham, up in eighth place, Jacob? Eighth.
Yeah, and Andy Carroll and Kevin Nolan back. And
Well, against Newcastle this
weekend. And against their old manager, Alan Pardew, of course.
Wow.
Yeah, who has played two games against West Ham since being sacked and has a 9-0 aggregate hold over them. So,
really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, with Charlton and Newcastle.
So you're not optimistic?
No, because Newcastle... they're possibly missing Barr, Kabay, Colaccini suspended.
Right.
I'm not sure if Tiote suspended as well, but I think...
He missed the last game. I'm not sure if he's back
now. I think he might be suspended as well. So they're a bit, as Harry Redknapp would say, down to the bare bones, possibly.
Right.
Is
that exclusively a Redknappism?
That's a big Redknappism, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So you think this is a big chance for West Ham?
Yeah, well, they've got a terrible record against away at Newcastle, though.
Okay. Andy Carroll to break his duck?
And be up for it.
He certainly will. Stoke QPR, I'm up for that.
Yeah.
QPR got no wins. Stoke just a one. And you know, everyone talking about pressure that Mark Hughes is facing. But what about Tony Pulis? He's only had one win with Stoke. They spent loads of money consistently, year on year out. When people do the net spend thing, which is always fun...
Mm.
they're Stoke the are always way up there in the top six, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty surprising in that regard.
Right. Okay. Do you know QPR won this fixture last year? 3-2.
No.
But do you think that'll happen again, Tom?
No.
All right.
Depends. I'm looking forward to seeing a journalist calling Mark Hughes Harry again, as they did after the game. Was it at the weekend?
They called...
Yeah.
Mark Hughes, because they're thinking about Harry Redknapp.
He gave them the death stare.
Right.
Which was quite fun.
Imagine he's quite good at that. Right. Well, that's the Premier League weekend. And very exciting it sounds too. In a second or two, SAF London. Football Weekly takes you all the places you want to go, whether it's the new camp or the Camp Nou or any of those exciting destinations, or even Southeast, is it 16? What is it? We don't know, do we? Palace. Crystal Palace. Anyway, Jacob, you were there the other day.
Yeah, on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night?
To see them go top of the league.
Oh, what an exciting story this is. They lose their manager, Doogie Freeman.
Yeah, he goes to Bolton a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then they get in Ian Holloway on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And he watches them beat Crystal Palace. He watches them.
Beat
Blackburn Rovers in 2-0.
Yeah.
Two goals from Glenn Murray. And then he's in the dugout for the first time on Tuesday night. As he walked out, he was, great reception, lapping it all up, and he shook hands with a fan, and they nearly scored in the first minute. Probably the roof would have gone off. He probably would have done a lap of honour if that had gone in. But they scored a very nice goal through Yannick Bolasie, who they signed from Bristol City in the summer, and he's, along with Wilfried Zaha, just one of the great young wingers they've got in the side. They were sort of a bit scratchy in the first half, and then in the second half they just absolutely tore into Ipswich, and McCarthy afterwards said they murdered us. Said, I won my first game. It was his second game, McCarthy. I won my first game against Birmingham, but if anyone thought we were going to come to Palace tonight and do the same, then they're deluded, because this is a really good side. And in the space of 13 minutes, they won three penalties, missed one, and scored three goals. They scored two penalties.
Right.
Glenn Murray could have scored a hat-trick of penalties. Instead, he had to settle for a hat-trick.
Right.
And just Wilfried Zaha, just far too... I mean, the Palace fans think whenever he does anything, just he's too good for you. And, it's completely right. Whenever he does anything, he's just superb.
Wow.
For the penalty, for the first one he won, he just did something on the left touchline where you're just sitting there and just, your mouth on
what
the floor
did he do?
Just an incredible piece of skill to get past the right back and go past two players and burst into the area and gets taken down. No one can handle him, basically.
No one can handle
him. They said they won't accept 20 million for him. He is unplayable. He's unplayable.
Right.
But they said they wouldn't accept 20 million for him.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll see.
Good news, Palace.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. In Holloway, dream debut for him, although they were playing the bottom of the table side. So,
yeah.
What, did he say anything funny and quirky in his press conference after?
Holloway, he was asked one question, and 15 minutes later, he was still talking.
Right.
And I'm not sure if he even asked the question.
Right.
Yeah, so I kind of zoned out a little bit because I was writing and wanted him to shut up and I wanted to go home.
Right. Okay. We certainly don't know that feeling on this pod. Sid Lowe will be on a little bit. Later, but that's fantastic news for Palace fans then.
Well, yeah, they started the evening in third place, and it looked like they weren't going to get to the top because Cardiff were 2-0 up after sort of 15-20 minutes against Charlton.
Right.
The game finished 5-4 to Charlton.
5-4 to Charlton.
Yeah.
That was a crazy scoreline.
It's another crazy scoreline.
It's incredible that Cardiff were top, because I was looking at some stats before the podcast. I was actually doing some research, and of their eight games away this season, they've lost five of them and conceded 18. So it just goes to show how important their home form is.
All right.
But Cardiff being top in November means nothing. I'm just waiting to see how they're going to mess it up.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not the first time they've thrown away. Actually, to Palace, they were 2-0 up on the road as well, and they managed to lose that one as well. So they've just got to look at, I guess, their game management and what they do when they're... I had to defend the lead.
Are they still playing in red?
Yes.
Oh. By the way, Ian Holloway's place at Blackpool taken by Michael Appleton, who is crawling from the wreckage at Portsmouth after a commendable job in the extremely straitened circumstances.
Yeah.
Good. Rome derby this weekend, James Horncastle.
Hot stuff.
It is hot stuff.
Yeah.
These two teams, separated by 2 points, in fifth and sixth in the table right now, but of course, this fixture about so much more than league positions.
Well, yeah, it's could be about sexual positions. It'll be a very sexy game, I think.
All right, then.
Roma...
You've bitten off a lot. Let's see how you can chew it.
I was going to say that Roma this season, into the rhythm method, if you like.
When they're in a rhythm position.
Well,
it's not, is
no,
it?
No. To be fair, but, no. I can see where you're going.
Okay. Right.
Well, when they're in a rhythm in a game,
right,
they're quite irresistible. But once you break them out of that rhythm,
yeah,
everything just kind of goes flaccid. But they are a rhythm team. You've seen it. They'll play like 20 minutes of irresistible football,
right,
where they're really in a rhythm.
Yep.
And then as soon as that's checked, they just fall apart.
Yeah.
They were sensational at the weekend against Palermo, 4-1. Right. Eric Lamela scored, six goals.
He's the man
games.
To watch, really, isn't he?
Well, the interesting thing about it, there's always someone who thrives under Zeman, who scores maybe 15 or 20 goals that you're not necessarily expecting. Like in his first stint in charge of Roma, it was Del Vecchio, for example. And Lamela looks to be that guy this year who's going to score 15 or 16, 17, 18 goals. Lazio, I think, are a lot more solid side than Roma. They got turned over at the weekend by Catania, but I guess Catania were due a result because they were unlucky. Refereeing decisions went against them against Inter and against Juventus, but I just think they've got something about them.
Lazio conceded 4 at the weekend. Roma scored 4, which in the usual derby logic means Lazio are massive favourites for this one, but not least because, I mean, they both had Zeman as manager. But as you say, with Zeman this time around, it's almost like he's hypnotised his players watching them, and for 20 minutes they'll perform caught up in this spell, and then someone clicks their fingers and they all just stand around going, what on earth am I doing on the stage in my underpants?
They have this, they snap out of it all the time, and that's the thing that I think Lazio don't do. I think they're a very disciplined, organised team. I think they haven't won in 3 or 4 games, which is quite unique because they had such a sensational start to the season. I think it was the best start, equaled their best start to the season ever. And also they did the double over Roma last year.
They did.
So you never know what you're going to expect from this Roma.
You certainly are. A bit like sex. Right. Just to bring it full circle, nice. The best, arguably the best game though this weekend is actually Milan-Fiorentina, which I think is going to be extremely interesting. God love Fiorentina.
Yeah,
and Milan in all sorts of trouble. Now, we talked about the thing. I tell you what we haven't done. We haven't dialed up Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello.
Hey, Sid Lowe. Tell you what, are you in a business like I've got things to do, places to go, people to meet mood, Sid?
No, not
really. Or are you just another person that I offended in Monday's controversial podcast?
Why, did you offend someone?
One or two people. Respect. It's all about respect in this business, isn't it, Sid?
I don't know, is it?
It should be, anyway. Anyway,
it's about R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me.
Let's find out, Sid. Let's find out. First of all, how much R-E-S-P-E-C-T are Celtic getting in Spain this morning?
That's what I've been given.
What have you just been given, Sid? I can hear running water, a dog barking.
It's absolutely pouring down with rain, which is why the dog's going up the wall, and she's just bought me it's like a round sort of tennis ball fashioned into a pig's head, which she's asked me to throw for her.
Wow, it's a bit like, it's a Super Classico game you're playing.
Yeah, it's the Luis Figo pig's head, which the dog now wants me to throw. So hear some sort of some feet skidding on wooden floor, it's not me, it's the dog.
Right. Well, anyway, how much respect, etc., blah, 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 Celtic in the Spanish press this morning?
Well, I must say that, I mean, apart from the inevitable question, which drives me absolutely mad, and I heard this last night on the radio, and I just sort of, I just felt like screaming. The inevitable question about, oh, isn't it sad that teams come and play defensively like this? And it's not really football, is it? And sometimes, you know, Barcelona have a habit of being very almost puritanical about their style. But, of course, it's not helped by the fact that you get into a game like that, and afterwards the first question to a Barcelona player is, oh, isn't it sad that teams do that? And so, of course, the Barcelona player says, well, it's a pity, because from their point of view, it is a pity that teams are very defensive and blah, blah, blah. But apart from that,
but
I must say...
they weren't defensive.
This is the question that's asked, and obviously in Spanish style terms, they were relatively defensive. But the overall, the overriding emotion last night was wow, isn't this brilliant? Because the impact of Celtic Park, the impact of things like seeing Neil Lennon's face, which you know, I think when you see something like that, all of the cynicism washes away. It's just kind of this pure joy of a brilliant moment. And I think actually in Spain, so I haven't actually seen today's papers yet. It's pouring down rain. I'm not stepping outside in that. The reaction has been one that's been really quite positive and really kind of enjoying the moment, and say, and it's partly because of the huge impact of Celtic Park singing You'll Never Walk Alone, the sheer noise of the place and the enjoyment of the occasion. It helps, of course, that despite the defeat, Barcelona probably still go through. I think if Barcelona were about to get knocked out, then the reaction obviously might be slightly different.
Yeah, and they're not entirely new to this kind of thing. I mean, they've had the odd surprise defeat along the way to even winning the Champions League in the past, in recent years, in fact, no?
Yeah, they have. But and I think as well, as I say, the other thing is just that sense of occasion. I think that's the thing that's kind of been bigger than everything else. One thing that has been picked up on a little bit, and I actually think should be picked up on rather more, is Barcelona's own culpability in this. That however good a team you are, you've got to assume that at some stage you're going to give away a corner or two. And Barcelona's continued failure to deal with the things that in a way should be the simplest things to deal with is kind of baffling. And it's true that they're missing Puyol and Piqué. It's true that they're missing Busquets. And by the way,
but Piqué was back though, wasn't he?
Yeah, but came back on as a sub.
Right.
So, but it's true they were missing Busquets, and you know, people quite like to dislike Busquets, but he's absolutely fundamental to Barcelona. So all those are factors, but their continued failure to deal with something so basic as corners, free kicks, throw-ins and stuff is I think a little bit baffling, and it goes back right to the start, which is to say, why on earth did they buy Alex Song?
Real Madrid, how bad a result was the draw with Dortmund there at the Bernabeu?
Well, as it turned out, it wasn't that bad because Manchester City let them off the hook. And one of the things that's so amazing about City is that City performances in Europe this year have largely been pretty dreadful. And yet they've been given the chance to get away with it. And Madrid not winning in the two games against Dortmund gave City the chance to get away with it. But them dropping points to Dortmund or to Dortmund or to Real Madrid would be okay. But it's dropping the points against Ajax. When they've been put in a position where just those two games against Ajax, winning those, they'd be up level with Real Madrid. So it's a bad result for Madrid. But because of City failing to take advantage, it's not as bad a result as it might have been. Mourinho, after the game, said, the last two times I won the Champions League, I finished second in the group, so let's not worry about it too much.
The last two times?
Well, the only two times.
Yeah, no, but I bet he did say the last two times. Okay, well, there you go. Valencia, ooh, they're doing well. Level with Bayern. On 9 points?
Yeah, and they play each other next. That's going to be a really, really good game. And I think really, really quite looking forward to that. Valencia have been a bit of a weird side this season, but at home, they've been really strong and they were impressive yesterday. I mean, yeah, I can't claim to know how good or bad Batty Borisov is and whether actually that needs to be taken into account, but a really good result. And more importantly, James, let's not forget them. The first Spanish team, the only Spanish team so far to already be qualified for next round is Malaga.
Absolutely, although they did concede their first goal this week.
Yeah, James, maybe you can tell me this. Less than 30,000 in San Siro.
James Horncastle. Yeah, it's not a bad crowd for Milan this season, actually.
No, in fact, I think that's the average. It might be a season high. I think
right.
It's generally the lack of enthusiasm around the club at the moment after the sales and obviously the season they're having. I don't think many people expect them to get out of the group. I mean, that was one of the things that Allegri was so criticised for was before the season, was saying that that his goal was to get out of the group and then see what happens because and anything beyond the second round of the competition would be a big bonus.
Well, they may well get out because they're still in second place, of course, but they got their all-time lowest ever season ticket, well, of the Berlusconi era, I think, and they... Where there was all that thing with them refunding season ticket sales after Ibra and Thiago Silva went, and all that, and maybe Malaga weren't seen as that big a draw. But what?
No, I mean, that's to be fair, James. That's probably true. I mean, you know, we're talking about Malaga side. It's their first ever time in the Champions League. They took 2,000, and it's a really big deal for them. And I sort of felt a little bit sorry for the Malaga fans, really, because this was built up as their big night. You know, wow, we're going to San Siro, and you go to San Siro, and think, yeah. Fought to stand around in an empty stadium, and the footage of the Malaga fans, they're really clearly enjoying it, but then as the camera kind of pans back, and there's this huge, vast, empty space behind them.
Right.
How good is Isco?
How good is Isco? Very, very good indeed, and I think he's better than I I think he's better now than I would have said to you 3 months ago, because he's very, very talented. His movement's excellent. His technique is brilliant. He provided a lovely assist for Elisea the other day. But there was a bit of last year where I thought he's not quite making the step up, because he's someone that's been talked about for quite a long time, playing at junior level and the Spanish team and so on. And he wasn't quite taking a step up. And to be honest with you, he looked a bit fat. He looked a bit heavy. He looked a little bit slow. But this year, with Malaga improving, with Malaga's players, the creative ones, being kind of given the responsibility to step forward since Santi Cazorla left, he and in particular Joaquin, those two have become the key focal point of everything they do creatively. And I think Isco's a really, really good player. Question mark is whether Malaga can keep hold of him. They're trying to negotiate a new contract with him now. That, of course, is designed more than anything else to make sure they get good money for him if and when he goes.
Right. Cheers, Sid, for being with us today.
That's all right, my pleasure.
Look forward to catching up with you and your canine chum next week, and hope the weather improves.
I think I'm in for 20 minutes of her going absolutely crazy now.
Right, well, we'll leave you to that then. Hey, rest assured, listeners, that I will be, inclement weather notwithstanding, making my trip to my big Euro kiosco of paper fun to present a special roundup of what the Spanish papers did have to say about brave, brave Celtic and brave, brave Borussia Dortmund and all the other exciting results midweek and that. And that'll be up Friday morning, as long as we remember to press record this time. In the meantime, that's pretty much it for today's podcast. What have you got ahead of you this weekend, Tom?
I'm going to my grandma's 80th.
All right then, happy birthday, Grandma Lutz.
McCrindle.
But, yeah. Jacob, what have you got going on this weekend?
Work. Might go to tennis as well.
Right. Mm. James?
I'm going up to Yorkshire for my mum's birthday. No.
Right. Happy birthday, your mum. Mrs. Horncastle?
It is Mrs.
Thank
Horncastle.
Thank goodness for that. Eh? All right. I'll be fine. Don't worry about me, everybody.
What are you doing?
Rome Derby.
I'm doing the Rome Derby and a top French game in the evening as well.
Ooh.
And I've got stuff. Hey, I think I'm doing one of my little stints on the Football League show on Saturday as well. I'm doing a little cameo one. You know, like when you watch a film and you spot, I don't know, some top star just comes in, an uncredited guy. It's often Bruce Willis or something. They're just too big for a credit.
Yeah.
And that's very much me in the Football League show.
Bruce Willis of football punditry. Oh, yeah.
That's the way you want to put it, James.
Would you like that?
Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
No, I can think of worse things. The Bruce Forsyth of punditry, that wouldn't be so much fun.
Have a long career.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. what do you mean by that?
I mean, he's still working at 85.
Bruce Willis. Oh, Forsyth.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. If you're still with us, bye then, listeners, and we'll be back on Monday.